We are back in Parsha's Lech Lecha. Where we last left off, we had taken ourselves through the historical process, all the way from Noah, 10 more generations, until we'd uncovered the pearl that was lost in the sand, as the Medrash puts it, with the pearl that was lost in the sand that took 10 generations more to sieve through the sand in order to find that pearl, and that was Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, as we've described in great detail, goes through the historical process over the course of Lech Lecha and becomes that paradigm, becomes the one to, in as all of Sefer Bereshit, according to the Ramban Olim, Ma'aseh Avot, Siman Levanim, he does set the path through what Jewish history will look like. And then we said, once we've defined what Jewish history would look like, then the next logical step is to then begin Jewish history. And so what we thought would logically come after Brit Ben Abitarim would be the birth of Yitzchak, the beginning of that genealogy, the beginning of that line, to move forward into its next stage. But we seem to have taken a detour. And that detour comes in the form of Avraham not being able at the moment to have children with Sarah. Therefore, Sarah somehow suggests that she would be built up by him having a relationship with Hagar HaMitzri. They produce Yishmael, which in and of itself is a huge question as to what's the function of that, what's the purpose of that internally. Beyond that, once we get Yishmael, then what happens? What happens after we get Yishmael? We get Yitzchak. I mean, just chronologically. I mean, we do get Yitzchak in the end. It's not like Yitzchak wasn't going to come. Yitzchak does appear. Yitzchak is the one to be the bearer, to take things to their next stage, to the next step. So the way that we left it off last time was that it took those generations to find the pearl within the sand, that pearl which would emerge as that 71st nation, as that pure individual, as that Lech Lecha, the 10 generations to find the uniqueness that was Avraham Avinu. And he is that pearl, but there's somehow, perhaps, some sort of impurities within that pearl that would then need to be removed from the system before we can produce Yitzchak. And that was a big thing to say, to claim about Avraham Avinu, that there would be any impurities in him at all, that somehow Yishmael is removing those impurities. What does that mean? So we're going to today start to unpack what those mean by giving a framework that will take us really throughout all of Chumash, and a framework that exists certainly within, more explicitly within Kabbalistic literature, throughout all of Torah. Good for now? Okay. You thought you had a question. Because we're going to attempt to go into, and we've been doing this very subtly underneath the surface throughout a lot of the Shirim, we've certainly been influenced by Kabbalistic literature in the same way that all of Torah exists as one large whole. Those of you who have been in other Shirim or other Chabarut may have heard this piece before, but this is a great context to reiterate it and to realize how it really fits into the global picture. That Torah exists on multiple levels. What are the four primary levels of Torah that we're familiar with? That we're familiar with from the Gemara, which I think I heard Miriam talk about last time. She might have mentioned it. I could have made that up. Hardes. Those different layers are Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod. There are four primary elements to Torah, four ways in which we can examine Torah for the sake of an adequate translation, a simple understanding of the text, or the clearest or most eminent understanding of the text on its surface level. Drash is the process of Chazal that is Torah Sheba'al Peh. It's learning out. The word in English is, an exegetical examination, but what it means is what Chazal is doing, what Gemara is doing, when it's learning out Pesukim on a level of Chazal in Nigla, in the revealed Torah. Sod is working on a whole different level. What does Sod actually mean? Sod is a secret. It's somehow a more secretive, hidden element of Torah. What is Sod always associated with?
Kabbalah.
Why would these two be inherently connected? What does Kabbalah mean? What does it mean? What's the root of Kabbalah? Le kabel means, to receive. How do secrets get passed along? They're whispered from one person to another. They have to be received. You can't intuit a secret. You can't figure out a secret. The way that you find out a secret is if somebody tells you that secret and you receive that secret. Kabbalah is the process of receiving the hidden aspects of Torah that assumably we wouldn't otherwise be able to know. That then, we're not going to spend really any time on this piece. Remez is then finding the linkages of that secret to its place in Torah. For example, once somebody goes and tells you a secret about somebody else. So before, when I saw the person, I didn't notice anything. But now that I know this secret about her and her personality and the way that she is, that I didn't understand, when I watch her do something, I get it now. Right, I can see how that's part of her personality. I can see how she does that. Once we know the secret, we can see how it's hinted to. And that in and of itself is given its own realm of Torah. What's most important to me about this for our purposes right now is that these are four layers from which to relate to the text. But everything comes from the Torah. No one of these four pieces are dissociated, are removed from the Torah itself. When we talk about pshat, we're critically examining the text. When we're talking about drash, we may struggle with how Chazal are reinterpreting is not the right word. We may struggle with how Chazal are interpreting the psukim because it doesn't match with the way that we would have thought to learn out that verse. But Chazal are always learning what they're learning from within the text. It's one way of dealing with the text of Tanakh. Sod, especially through the means of Remez, Sod is another way to read the text. And Kabbalah cannot exist in a vacuum. Kabbalah may be something that perhaps needs to be a received tradition, but it always needs to be linked back to text. And that's something that we often forget. Kabbalah is this kind of like out there thing. Well, it's not this out there thing. Kabbalah is part of Torah. It's one fourth of Torah. Yeah.
If that's the case, then how could so many people have denied what the Ramchal said for argument's sake? Or there are so many people who are opposed to...
When you're dealing with secrets, they get complicated. They're more nuanced. They're held by a few number of people, so if you don't get to see the whole picture, it could be very confusing. It's a much deeper realm. It's a much more internal realm of Torah. Kabbalah is if it's the secret, it's the deepest part of myself, so to speak. Right? Some people relate it to the pasuk, Hanistarot l'Hashem Elokeinu, v'aniglot lanu levanino ad olam. Hanistarot l'Hashem Elokeinu, the secrets, those are for God, those are about God, those are closer to God. Those are always going to be harder to understand, those are always going to be more convoluted. Haniglot lanu levanino, the Torah taniglot, that's for us. That's more easy to understand, that's more easy to relate to, that's more revealed in the world. Torah taniglot, Torah tanistar, this is the revealed Torah, this is the hidden Torah. Things that are hidden and covered up, they're murkier. They're more easily understood. It's easier to have conflicts about them. And it's not like in Drash, we don't have 10 million different opinions who are arguing with each other about how they understand Pesukim. That's what all of Gemara is. So I want to extend ourselves into one aspect, one piece of Kabbalah. The last preface that I want to do before we do that is to address the concern of how we can even talk about Kabbalah at all. Kabbalah is something which we have a certain understanding of or a certain framework of in our mind that it's something that a person only learns when they're 40 years old. One needs to understand what the meaning of the number 40 is. That's not our conversation right now, but that's a very, very significant number, and it's not by accident that the number 40 is attached to Kabbalah in the time when one's ready to learn Kabbalah. So where do we get the rights with me, who's under 40, and you who are also under 40, to start talking about things even in the simplest realms of Kabbalah? And the approach that my Rebbe takes to this, and I think it's a very powerful approach, is that unfortunately we live in a reality today where Kabbalah is part of culture, where you can have things like pop Kabbalah, which in and of itself is a contradiction in terms and a total distortion of the entire system. A massive distortion of the system. The fact that pop in its definition is that it's part of popular culture. A secret that's part of popular culture is no longer a secret. If sowed is the most secretive and deepest parts of myself, if the sowed is the most secretive and hidden and deepest parts of Torah, they belong in secretive and hidden places. They belong in the deepest places. They belong in small conversations, in small chaburot. They belong in places that respect the tzniut of Torah. The Torah is incredibly tzanua in its essence, is incredibly modest in its essence. When we read from the Torah on Shabbat or during the week, we make sure that the Torah is always covered, and we put it down on the Shulchan. Between each aliyah, we make sure that the Torah is covered. The Torah is meant to have secretive aspects or tzanua aspects. And the fact that those people in our generation who most identify as those who breach every level of tzniut possible are the ones who claim to be the bearers of Kabbalah in a pop Kabbalah culture, all of that is possibly the most massive distortion of what Kabbalah and Sod is meant to be. Therefore, one approach to it is to assume that should we be engaging this? Maybe, maybe not. But if it's going to be something where we're going to be familiar with this terminology and familiar with these concepts in their broken sense from the outside world, at least we can do the best we can to try to put them in their proper context with whatever tools we have. Is that clear?
I'm saying like we're fixing it a little by doing it in the proper way. We're taking away from
the proper way would be to wait. But if the choice is between
desecrating it,
between leaving it open to the public only in its broken form, and that's your only access to it, is what you read on the Kabbalah Center on the internet, or you see posted on some poster somewhere in a flowy shul, right? If that's all your connection to it is, or at least in this room, in this realm, with us here seriously, you know, engaging and discussing aspects of Torah to the best of our ability and the best of our understanding with a tradition that I have from my Rebbeim as well, then it might be b'dieved, but it's better than nothing at all, considering the alternative. Okay? Anybody else have anything they want to ask, share? Good? Okay. There's a term that many of us might be familiar with from things like pop Kabbalah, which we're now going to leave behind and move into, and as best attempt we can is understanding a simple paradigm within the context of Kabbalah, which is called either the Sfirot or the Midot. Is anybody familiar with either of these terms? Heard them before? You could know what they are, you could not know what they are. Has anybody never heard of these terms before? There were a lot of people who abstained. It's usually one or the other. Has anybody heard of these terms before? Okay, never heard of these terms before. The majority of their meaning has at least had, like, somebody's heard, like, oh, there's something called the Sfirot out there. There's something called the Midot out there. So that's the idea, meaning this is something which would not necessarily have been out there before. Let's try to define what they are, what they're trying to do, what they're connected to. Now, to come back to what we started with, even though it's sowed, even though it's within the realm of Kabbalah, it can't be dissociated from the text. And the seven Sfirot, or the seven lower Sfirot that we're going to talk about, some of you are familiar with ten, we're only going to be talking about the lower seven, but the seven Sfirot that we're talking about come from a Pasuk, which is actually a verse that we say every single day. Those of us who daven Shacharis every day say every single day, and are familiar with it, there are tunes that we sing to it when we use it on Shabbos as well. The source Pasuk of this is Lecha Hashem Hagidulah, keep going. Vehagvura, Vatif Eret, Vahnetzach, Vahod, Ki, Kol Bashamayim, Uva Aretz. And then the last one is Lecha Hashem, nope, Hamamlacha. Right, we didn't realize what we were saying in the morning, but this is what we've been talking about every morning. Hashem Agdula, Vura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Kol Bashamayim Va'aretz is going to be one of these midot or sfirot. Lecha Hashem Amlecha. The question then becomes, what are these midot or sfirot? And I want us to pay very careful attention to the way that we're going to define them. So one of the reasons why there can be confusion about the midot or sfirot is, how do we define a mida?
Trait.
Character trait. Right? Different midot. We work on our midot. So, if we attribute these as midot, and we say that these are midot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as I think Rabbi Eli just said, the Rambam would consider us a kofer. The Rambam would be correct. These are not traits of God. God does not have traits. God is indivisible. God is one. God is undifferentiated. And we have no understanding of God in essence. What God does is, God created seven primary character traits. He created them. And it's through these traits that God interacts with and guides his world. It's how we experience the presence of God. God interacts with us using these seven created traits. God acts in the world with chesed. That's going to be, we'll get back to that in a second. God acts in the world with chesed. He acts in the world with vura. He acts in the world with netzach. He utilizes these created character traits, but they are not traits that actually describe God himself. They are not God in essence. They're the way that we experience God's presence. They're the way that we experience God guiding and ruling the world. Questions on that before we move on? Yeah.
Yes, but I don't know how to word it.
So when you have it, ask.
Where did you get that from?
Get what from?
The Dula Chesed.
Oh, add that. Okay.
She's ready.
These, yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Are we saying that he has no traits by definition, or that we can't know what those traits are?
God is infinite, we are finite, and it is impossible for the finite to comprehend the infinite.
You mean we can't even know if there's such a thing as a trait to it?
We also know that God is undifferentiated. To say that God has traits, anything with an S after it can't relate to God. God is one.
Meaning that if he...
It gets more complicated, and next year we do Derech Hashem, we'll get into it a little bit more. A little bit more. Okay? These are the seven primary elements by which God interacts with the world. What that means for us is, on a more practical level, which is why we're sticking with the word midot and not really getting into the word sfirot right now, although both are legitimate words to use for them, is that if we are all created, B'Tselem Elokim, then we also have these seven traits within us, and we are meant to guide our own internal world by harnessing these seven traits and using them in their proper fashion. That's one layer of what it means to be created B'Tselem Elokim. Just like God rules the world, guides the world with these seven created traits, so too are we meant to guide our own internal world with these seven inherent traits. The way that these traits are often formulated, put together, or described using their Kabbalistic terminology, some of which will deviate slightly from the Pasuk itself, which was your question, Marissa, we're not going to get into it at the moment, is as follows. Chesed, which is linked to Gedula, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod. The Mekubalim take this phrase of Kikol Bashamayim Uva'aretz and translate it into a single word that just encapsulates it, which is Yisod, and then Malchut. You'll often maybe see them with lines. Now, these traits are associated with a number of things. Anybody familiar with different associations between these words? Things that are linked to them?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. The Yishpizim are one of them. Yeah? Good. So any system of seven is then going to have to relate to this. Remember how we talked about way back in our original conversations about Parshat Bereshit, how the 7 days of creation are one system, but the Torah goes out of its way to put a Parshat Tucha after each one to make sure we know that each of them is unique. Each one of them is going to be embodying one of these 7 primary elements. Yom Rishon is going to be Chesed oriented. Yom Sheni is going to be Gevura oriented. Yom Shishi is going to be Tiferet oriented.
Funny, we got Chesed in seminary on Mondays.
Okay. You can make a capitalistic request of your seminary. We know even colloquially that the ideas of Malchut, Shabbos Malka, Mamlacha is somehow related to Shabbat. I mean, there are pieces here of things that we are somewhat familiar with, even when we start to see those patterns emerge. They'll also, for sure, emerge in all of the System 7, and that's why Judaism has 7 all over the place. I mean, even throughout some more 7s. You said Sfirat Omer, 7 Ushpizin, keep going. Throughout 7s in Judaism. 7 is an incredibly important number of Judaism because it's related to this.
7 Aviyot.
Interesting. Never heard that connection, but Ms. Thelma, the answer would be yes, of course. Yeah, interesting. Good. More simple. Just throughout, I mean, 7s are all over Judaism.
It's a good number.
Shemitah. Yovel is 7 cycles of 7. 7 days of... What? 7 days of the week. 7... A group of each year. Remember we talked about how there's also 7,000 years in history in groups of 1,000 years. 7 days of, somebody just said, Pesach. 7 days of Sukkot. The Shivat HaMinim. 7 is all throughout Judaism, and those are all going to have to be related back to this fundamental building block system. But somebody brought up the seven Ushpizin from Sukkot. Who are our 7 Ushpizin? Abraham. Who else?
Yitzchak.
Yaakov. Keep going. What?
That makes so much sense with Ramanas, right?
It makes sense with everything. You can't go forward in understanding paradigms using that. That's why we're doing this. Keep going. So now we're going to go out of order according to the Kabbalistic order. Yes.
Moshe.
Aharon. Then Yosef, who somehow gets thrown out of order to be linked to this 6th trait. And David, who's almost very overtly associated with Malchus. What does it mean to have an individual who's linked to one of these midot? What would that mean? What would it mean that there's a connection between Avraham and Chesed on this very fundamental level? What is Avraham doing? What is Avraham then?
Chesed.
He is Chesed. Refine it. Say it more concretely.
Like Avraham is Chesed.
Good. Other words? Good. Okay.
He's bringing one of Hashem's attributes into the world.
Excellent. I want to merge those two. Avraham, by being a full embodiment of Chesed, is establishing Chesed and its complete manifestation into the world. So too, Yitzchak by Gevura, Yaakov by Tiferet, etc., etc., etc. They fully establish the trait of Chesed in reality. They bring it out in its fullest form. The greatest manifestation and the ultimate manifestation of Chesed in the world is coming through Avraham Avinu.
Tov.
So if we associate Chesed and Avraham, if we're linking those two together, let's try to understand what Chesed is. How would we define the term Chesed? Those of you who have been in other shiurim that we've done this before, let other people get a chance to really think it out. What? How do we define Chesed?
Selfless.
Other words.
I think Art Scroll says loving kindness.
Always good to quote Rabbi Scroll. Loving kindness. Okay. What else?
Okay.
Not yet.
Looking beyond oneself.
Beyond oneself.
Giving.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Community service.
Community service. When dealing with these traits, when dealing with anything in the world, nothing is so simple, except for maybe here, beyond oneself, I think, being the closest to reaching a more broad definition, that they're either good or bad. And in fact, we know this going back to Bereshit again. Everything that now exists in the world has what in it? Tov and, well, not just sin, everything has bad. Everything is evil. Everything has Tov and Ra in it. There are positive and negative aspects to everything. Ze le'umat ze asah Elohim. Everything has opposite sides. Here's an interesting pasuk that describes the word chesed in a way that we might not have expected it to be described. That pasuk is in Vayikra, pasuk Yud Zayin, in a description of Vayikra Chaf Yud Zayin. In a description of the arayot, negative or improper sexual relationships between men and women. Perek Chet pasuk Yud Zayin, Perek Chaf, Chaf, Chaf Yud Zayin, Chaf Yud Zayin. That's not Zayin, but go with it. Chaf Yud Zayin reads as follows. V'ish asher yikach et achoto bat aviv, a person who takes his sister, bat aviv or bat imo, whether the daughter of the father or the mother, v'rat ervata, and he has an inappropriate relationship with her, v'hit tir'at ervato, chesed hu, it's a chesed. V'nichrata leinei b'nei amam, ervat achoto gila avono yisa. He bears the sin of his chesed. It's very odd. That doesn't fit selfless, doesn't fit loving kindness, doesn't fit community service, right? What does that mean? So what would be a broader definition of the term chesed without infusing it with the positive connotations that we associate with it? Help still is a very positive connotation. You're not, this individual is not helping his sister, he's taking advantage of his sister.
Giving works here, or sharing. They work because...
Okay. It doesn't take link to the specific pasuk. I'm saying, what's a broader... How would you kind of...
Feeling a lack. No.
To do for another,
yeah.
Whether it's like good or bad.
Good. And Elior, how would you finally define it?
Giving to another.
No, giving is going beyond one's boundaries. Beyond oneself. Going beyond one's boundaries, beyond oneself. Any act where I go beyond my boundaries, beyond my definitions, that's an act of chesed. And it can either be good or bad. It can either be distorted or in a positive way. Selflessness, loving kindness, those are me going beyond myself in a way that's positive. But any time I go beyond my boundaries, I'm doing an act of chesed, even if it's negative. Let's tie one other piece together that we sort of left hanging back in Parshat Noach. Think for a second in Parshat Noach. Think about the concept that we have a pasuk like Olam Chesed Ibaneh. The world is founded upon Chesed, which then makes sense. It's the first of the Midot. It's Avraham Avinu, who's the first of Klal Yisrael. Olam Chesed Ibaneh. We get to a point in Parshat Noach where the world needs to be destroyed. Why? What are the reasons that we're familiar with that was the sins of the generation of the flood that caused the flood to happen?
Conformity.
No, not Dora Palaga, not Tower of Babel, the flood.
Adultery.
The other big one is theft. What is theft? I'm going beyond my boundaries to take that which isn't mine. It's an act of chesed, but it's a distortion of chesed. Adultery is, I'm limited to one person who I'm meant to give to have a physical relationship with beyond myself. And I'm going beyond that into places where it's not supposed to go. That's why the relationship with one's sister is a chesed. It's beyond the boundaries of what one is supposed to do. And the world comes to a place where it's totally destroyed chesed, that the whole world itself falls apart. And in the same way, to add another layer to what we're talking about, God then gives an endless outpour of rain, an endless outpour of chesed that can't be soaked up by the earth. It's giving without boundaries. To further extend the midah k'neged midah b'parshat Noach.
Sorry, can you just repeat the theft and the adultery is going beyond the boundaries of oneself.
I'm going beyond myself to that other person.
So,
I'm going myself to that other person's property.
That's too much chesed.
It's chesed. It's distorted chesed. I like your term of too much chesed. It's because it means that it's chesed that's not tempered. It's chesed with no limits. What is going to be able to limit or restrain chesed a little bit?
Gibura.
That's going to be your opposite trait on the other side of Gevura. Ezehu Gibor, HaKovesh Et Yitzro. Who is a true mighty person? One who overcomes their inclinations. One who is able to pull back inside. One who is able to remain within one's boundaries. Chesed and Gevura are always meant to be pulling at each other to find balance. All of these midot or sfirot also have corresponding parts of the body. Let's just talk about the first three midot. Chesed is, does anybody know? The right hand. Gvura is the left hand. And the torso or the spine would be tiferet. But if you think about Gvura being the right hand and Chesed being the right hand and Gvura being the left hand, listen to Amamar Chazal, Tana Rabbanan. This is in many places in the Gemara. One is Sota Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Tana Rabbanan. Le'olam, always, says the Gemara, Tehei, small dochak, that your hand is pushing away, is maintaining your boundaries. V'yamin, mikarevet, that your right hand is pulling in from the outside. You're always navigating between these two modes. You're always trying to find balance. Le'olam yehei small dochak, v'yamin mikarevet. Having a balance between those two. You never want unrestrained chesed. That leads to distortion. And you never want unrestrained gvura either, for that matter.
Which one's dochak, right?
Dochak means to push away. Meaning, because I want to maintain my boundaries. Don't come near me, that's the left. Smol dochak. V'yamin mikarevet. The yamin is pulling closer. So we have Avraham Avinu, who is the pure embodiment of all chesed. If we say that we want to remove impurities from within Avraham Avinu, what are we removing? We're removing all aspects of distorted chesed. What we're going to pick up with on Monday is, in what way does Yishmael embody the removal of distorted chesed from within the system of Avraham, and why that needs to come through Hagar? Those are the two huge open questions that we then have left, that remove them from the system in a way that purifies the chesed of Avraham to be able to then produce Yitzchak in full purity. Bracha.
But then, why not just cultivate Gvura in Avraham, instead of, giving some bad aspects of his chesed to someone else?
We're removing them from his system. We're removing the negative, meaning Avram is chesed, and we're removing the negative pieces of chesed from within Avram, who embodies chesed, period, to leave him in his pure form, to be able to then fully be in a full place to produce Yitzchak.
Okay.
We'll think about it more, we'll develop it more, we'll develop Yishmael more, Hagar more, we'll do that all next time, which will be our final discussion on Parshat Lech Lecha. Okay, to be continued on Monday.